We're in Galatians 6. Galatians 6:6, matter of fact. Six says, "The one who is taught the word is to share all good things with the one who teaches him. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who are of the household of faith." If you look at this in terms of section, verse 6:6 would be, you know, could be one total topic, and 7 and 8 is a topic together, 9 and 10. Would be topics. So you could have three separate topics, and that they're just, Paul's coming to the end of his letter, and he just has these three things to say, and he just sticks them in there. Another way to look at it is that they're united by verses 7 and 8, the idea of reaping and sowing. And we do see this in part, just a little reference to it, in verse 9, where it's talking about good deeds, it talks about reaping. So if you see this as a principle, and the principle being given in 7 and 8, then you have the principle and three topics. And I think that probably has, a good validity for viewing it that way. Not just three disjointed topics, but three topics that are united with this one concept, one principle. So let's look at the principle first in 7 and 8. It says, "Do not be deceived." That is, don't be fooled. God is not mocked. God is, you're not, and the word for mock would be to make a fool of, or, the idea that you're somehow pulling the wool over God's eyes. He didn't see what's going on. God is not mocked. "For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap." And so there's the principle. What a person sows is what he will reap. And, you can be self-deceived and think this principle doesn't work, but Paul is saying there is a principle here. God is not fooled, and so there would seem to be, by the statement, God is not mocked, God is not fooled, that there is not just simply this general principle, but more of a divine cause-effect, that whatever a man sows, he will reap. Though it could still be in the broader sense, kind of like we see this in Proverbs, where you have these general truths, but they don't always, it wouldn't always be true for each and every person, but they're generally true. I think this is broader than that. I don't think this is that type of a principle. I think it's saying, what you sow is, what you reap. Having said that, then if you look back, verse 6, there's these three areas. The one who is taught the word is to share all good things with the one who teaches him. Share all good things, then it would be looking at, material things. Our immediate application then, immediate context would say, well, it's in church and support of pastors. But if you look at if you think through the context of where it's written, that's not likely to have been the setting, especially in Galatia, being one of the early letters. More the ones who taught were the teachers, like the apostles that went around and other ones that traveled around teaching. And so there are, you know, their support for almost in the sense of the more like what we think of missionaries would be more in keeping there, though with other passages it would seem to have appropriate application elsewhere. But the principle being the concept there, the one who is taught the word is to share all good things, you know. And so there, it's a kind of a twofold to think about it in the terms of reaping and sowing. Both, you know, it could be looked both ways at both the, if you would, the teacher and the congregation in the sense of reaping and sowing, and how that would apply to either, and the misuse or abuse that it could occur either way. There's, you know, there's, I remember hearing, I can't remember who it was. It was somebody who was telling me this, though, but it wasn't necessarily something I'd read about, but it was somebody that this, and then a Baptist, well, I mean, there's so many different kinds of Baptists, but, you know, Southern Baptists typically, while the term is not used, they see, you know, it's a single elder church. The pastor is the elder. And then you have deacons that, you know, have a board of deacons. And so the term elders, you know, I don't know if it's ever used, but the pastor would be the elders, the polity of the church. And so this pastor, this guy that was on the staff, told me that this, he really, you know, kind of, it was very forceful with the board that the staff needed a raise. And, you know, he really fought hard for the associate pastors to get a raise. And after that was granted, then he turned to the passage in Timothy and about double honor. The elder that rules well should have double honor. And you know, and applied that, then he should get twice the raise. And, seems a little hard-fetched to hard-pressed to say that's the appropriate interpretation and application of that passage. So, you know, there can be abuses there, but there can be on the other side, there's, you know, places where, you know, the aspect of, you know, paying a pastor or something is, you know, where people have just a very, you know, should be the most meager salary there is. And, you know, and so this one is not addressing either of those in the sense of abuses or going either way, but it would fall within that, you know. He's given this statement, but it falls into that idea of what one reaps, one should sow. Or what you sow is what you reap. There's something that applies both ways there. Verse 8 then has to do with the sense of holiness, spirituality. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Now, if we see eternal life here in the sense of that this is speaking of salvation, if that's the context, then, you know, and then he's just saying, you know, if you depend upon yourself, if all your, it's dependent upon your works and everything you do yourself, then, you know, there's nothing. But if you sow to the Spirit, then there's eternal life. That definitely, would be true biblically. But we can also see it in terms of spirituality. And you know, maybe not seeing eternal life in that, in that dimension of equated with salvation. But a broader sense of holiness or spirituality, that if we sow to the flesh, then, you know, there's not going to be this sense of holiness in our lives. And if ones would ask, you know, why do I not experience, you know, this heightened spirituality, then we can say, well, you know, what is your life like? What do you do in your life? And that may answer the question. I think that one of the things that we have problems, or at least, I think generically we have problems with passages like this is we want to see the cause and effect in a very clear way. And so the person that pursues wealth as their, goal, then, it's like, well, we should be able to see within our lifetime their demise, just how that destroyed them. And that may never happen. And that's really not what it's saying here. But you could have, sometimes these will be, used on the sense God is not mocked. We'll say, well, if you live this kind of lifestyle, it's going to be made known. It's going to become public at some time. Well, I don't know that that's true. Does it happen with some people? Yes. Is that the guarantee of this path? Is that what it's talking about? I don't necessarily think so. But it's saying, if that's your lifestyle, if lifestyle's the flesh, then you don't have the benefits of the spirituality. You don't have the benefits of the holiness. You don't have those things that go with it. And so the Christian that's in that realm then doesn't experience those kinds of happiness, joy. Then we tend to go the other way with the Western mindset and say, well, if you pursue this, then you will be, quote, successful in the Western world. And so if you think of somebody that's kind of becomes well known and somewhat wealthy, Rick Warren is one that in the last 10, 15 years has become very well known and very wealthy with his book. And you say, okay, that's what it means. But, I have no reason to think that he's not a spiritual, holy person. But we've seen in other realms, success in terms of a big church, success in the terms of making lots of money, it doesn't equate to holiness. And on the other hand, one of the neatest guys I've ever met was guy, the name of McLeod, that was at this church in Canada where this revival started. And it broke out. Black Beast talks about it in his book. He was in the same city, a different church in the same city, though. And this revival started, and it spread through all the United States. If you go back into the 70s, the lay witness movement came out of that church. And this guy was the pastor of a small church, Blackaby. Now, he was the pastor of a small church, but his book, Experiencing God, then brought him to notoriety and I would assume some measure of wealth and fame. But this other guy, he did get to be known because of that, and I heard him at a conference, but he was, he didn't have some big group, and he wasn't at, and yet, he's this very spiritual, humble man. So we sometimes make the mistake of saying that, what you reap has to mean success in the Western world, and that's definitely not the concept here. But the things that are associated with it, with spirituality, with you there. Then he moves on, he says, let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So the idea of doing good. And here you see the idea that doing good isn't necessarily easy. Not to lose heart, not to give up, not to become faint-hearted, not to get worn out from doing good. And in due time, there will be benefits from it if we do not grow weary. So you think about the idea of doing good, helping people out. Well, sometimes those are pretty easy things. They're just certain things that we enjoy doing, certain people we enjoy helping. And so there are certain situations where, quote, doing good is very easy. There's other situations where doing good may not be quite so easy. It doesn't come at the opportune time. It is inconvenient. They're not your favorite person. It's you know, when it's out of your way, it's, you know, it becomes difficult. You know, it's more difficult. And so it says not to grow weary in this. It says in verse 10, so then, while we have opportunity, let us do good for all people, and especially to those who are the household of faith. And so here we see this in the sense of two circles. There's an inner circle that are believers, and there should be a focus on doing good to believers, but it needs to be broader than also. When you think about a passage like this, and you have to wonder in terms of how much have we lost as Christians in the United States by letting government take over so many programs, that the church seldom, you know, has a program that it does that reaches out to people, because the government's taken over all these kind of programs. And, you know, with Bush, first Bush, there was trying to get faith back into things, and, you know, groups of faith, distributing government programs, basically. And, but the attitude is so different. You know, we live in a society that entitlement is incredible. You just listen to the commercials. And there, I heard this commercial for, it's the state of Oklahoma, and it's about, it was about hunger, and saying that, you know, everybody is just one disaster away from hunger. And given certain parameters, that would be true. But, you know, one illness could wipe out your savings, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, it's making the point thus that, you know, this is potentially broad for everyone. So, you know, nobody should be ashamed. Nobody should be, you know, this is not below anyone. And it said, you deserve not to be hungry. And I thought, why? Why do I deserve not to be hungry? You know, how much more appropriate, in my opinion, it would have been that the citizens of Oklahoma care so much they don't want you to be hungry. But see, that would be a different aspect. You know, it communicates something different. And then all of a sudden that would say, well, that says something about your self-esteem. Maybe you wouldn't feel good about yourself. But the other one is you deserve it. But see, mine, you know, I would think is on the other hand is that when you give to people, then it says something about you and it does something for you to give it. But for the person receiving it, it also should say something about gratitude. But see, gratitude's out the window nowadays because everybody deserves something. And so here's one commercial that's on the radio about hunger in the state of Oklahoma. Then I saw this commercial last night about heartworm for dogs. And, you know, it shows all these dogs, all these, you know, fun, loving dogs, blah, blah, blah. And then it started talking about the consequences of heartworm, just how devastating it is if they can survive it and all that. And then, but yeah, there's heart guard that, you know, given once a month, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And your dog deserves. I mean, dogs are entitled now. But see, the sense of entitlement goes against this, as opposed to us motivated to care for people. And so I think that's, you know, one of the things here. It says, you know, this, and so I think there's a principle here talking about reaping or sowing and reaping. What you sow is what you reap. So, you know, you could use that illustration endlessly of sowing wheat and wondering why, you know, why you didn't get rye and et cetera. I mean, you know, what you sow is what you reap. If you throw out a few handfuls of corn, then you're probably not going to get 40 acres of corn. You know, there's a relationship with that. And so that's where, Paul basically concludes his letter. The rest of the verses, while they do have some, very specific things, he's looking back, capitalizing, what he's saying there. And so this comes down to the end, and there's, it is a little different, but it does have that around this theme, I think, in the that occurs in the middle of this passage. And so you have the one is about teaching and support, the other one about spirituality and the flesh, and then third one about doing good. All of them take time, all of them take effort, all of them are corresponding to what you put into it. And do you have thoughts or questions? Or?
I know when I was younger, from high school or before I met, one summer at camp, the speaker was to, I don't know if he was talking about Galatians, but he talked about this verse and challenged us as students to go back home and do something for like our youth leader and to take them out to dinner with your money and demonstrate to them that you appreciate the time and things that they spend on you and the youth group and those kinds of things. And that's really stuck with me for a long time. Broader than our thinking of paid pastors.
Yeah.